Welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm Deborah Eckerling, author of Your Goal Guide and creator of the Deb Method for Goal Setting Simplified. You can't reach your goals on your own. You need your people. So every week I bring together some of my people to dive into the special topic. You can watch us live or the replay, or you can even listen to Goal Chat on the Marketing Podcast Network. Wherever you found us, we are glad you're here. And in the case of today, choosing your writing and publishing goals. Now, it is March. It is International Women's Month. And I could not let this month pass without a Empower Women conversation on the benefits of writing and publishing. I am, well, if you listen to this before, you know I'm a huge advocate of setting not just goals, but writing goals. We all have something to say. We all have a history, and we all have information that we want to impart. And we're going to just make it a lot easier for you to get those words out of your head and onto the page with the help from this week's panel. We have and all authors. We have Amy Friedman, who I think I've known longest of today's tribe. And the last time I saw Amy in real life, she was on my writing panel for 140 conference, not even 140 anymore, eye roll, in 2016. So I've been trying for a bit to get you on, and I'm really glad you were available to dive in today. Marita Golden, who is, I think, my newest friend in the group, just did a wonderful lunch and learn for us for Women's National Book Association San Francisco chapter. And I think I met you for like 30 seconds, and I'm like, I know you're speaking for the group, but come on my show. So glad to have you here. And Susan Shapiro, who I know through a variety of writing communities, it always has something good to say to help people get their words out, you know, as in out. Whether it's in book form or articles or what have you. So I think if you're tuning in, it's because you're itching to write or you love writers. Either way, we accept you. And we are glad you're here to talk about writing and publishing goals. Before we jump into the subject matter, I would love for you all to take a moment just to introduce yourself a little bit better, why you are here and what it is about the power of writing. So, Amy, let's start with you. Go.
Okay. Well, nice to meet everybody and nice to be here with you, Deb. And amazing to me that so many years have passed since that panel, because I remember it very well. I will say this, that I am a writer and a ghostwriter and an editor and a teacher. About 11 years ago, I launched a nonprofit and kind of disappeared in some ways from the world of writers as I led this nonprofit to growth and expansion. But part of the work that we do, it's a nonprofit to support kids, teenagers who are impacted by incarceration, who have family members who are incarcerated or have been incarcerated. And there's a component that's a writing component. So much of my writing life has been to bring their words into the world. So I also launched a small press called Out of the Woods Press. I'm kind of back, and I'm not having to be the executive director anymore. Hallelujah. And so I'm back in more steeped in the writing world, and look forward to hearing from my fellow writers and from Deb and any questions that anybody has about anything.
Well, great to have you here and glad you have emerged and you have emerged here. Marita, welcome.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here. And Amy, I applaud your nonprofit efforts. It sounds like something really, really important and really transformative. 33 years ago, I co-founded the Zora Neale Hurston Richard Wright Foundation, which is a national organization that for the last 33 years has been making a big difference in terms of opportunities for Black writers. We present an annual summer writers workshop, weekend writing programs, public readings, and each year we present a big splashy Hurston Wright Legacy Award ceremony, and we honor Black writers from the diaspora. And we honor also important cultural workers. So I started that 33 years ago, but like Amy, I have stepped aside. I have made way for a new, what I call a new generation of leadership. And it's kind of nice to be president emerita. In addition, I teach my own writing workshops online, memoir, how to get published, fiction. After many years of teaching in MFA programs from Johns Hopkins to George Mason to VCU, and also writing a lot of fiction and nonfiction books of my own.
Well, I feel like, and the list goes on and on. I'm really so pleased. And you didn't even mention the poetry.
I did poetry in our workshop.
Well, and I always, and I said this, and I even said it in the tag because it just amazes me. I hadn't written any poetry since I had one poem published when I was in high school. And it's a reminder that as writers, it's really important to do different things. So for me, it was like, wow, this was not that I would ever, at least in the near future, seek to get poetry out there, but it's so important to be stretching those writing muscles all the time. So
yeah. And poetry's so emotional and so connected to our soul, you know. So mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Susan, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. So I always say I'm the author of many books my family hates. And when it came, I had studied, I have an undergrad degree in writing, a graduate degree, and then I'd taken writing classes for another 10 years. And I came out of all of those programs and studies not even knowing how to write a cover letter to send out any of the work I'd spent, you know, more than a decade perfecting. And so when I was asked to teach at the new school, I said, I don't really want to teach journalism 101, poetry 101, fiction 101, because even though I love my classes, I found it frustrating that nobody was really addressing what I cared about the most. And so I launched my own kind of teaching, and I called it the instant gratification takes too long method, where the goal of my class was to write and publish a great piece by the end of the class. And it was really fun. It was a big hit. I think I started in 1993 at the new school, and I expanded to NYU and Columbia. And most recently, I've been doing classes online also. And the exciting thing about teaching online is that I could bring in all the fantastic editors and newspaper magazine editors, literary agents, and book editors that I've worked with to Zoom in, especially since the pandemic. I've been teaching private classes online. So it's been very exciting to help people not only figure out exactly what they want to write and how to perfect it and make it better, but also how to pitch it or submit work, because that's something that I feel like, you know, it's really hard to figure out. And I did my book, Byline Bible, which I use for my writing class is kind of, my students always say that I speak too quickly. So I wrote everything down. So I have every single thing down. And most recently I did a book called The Book Bible, How to Sell Your Manuscript No Matter What Genre Without Going Broke or Insane. And what was exciting about that is that I have 18 books out in 8 different genres. And I always feared that I was kind of like a literary debutante who couldn't stick with one genre because my books never did well enough in one genre. So I always had to switch. But what's exciting is it gives me a very good overview. So when students take my, sell your first book class, they can tell me their idea and what their goal is. And I can immediately sense, you know, whether there's a certain genre that might be easier to publish or that might be able to help them with their goal sooner.
And it really begs the question, you know, if a tree falls in the forest, if you write things and no one reads them, does it count? I'm going to say yes, but that is yes. An actual question.
No, yeah. Of course it counts. I mean, because I think that, well, first I just want to say to Susan that I have a soft space in my heart for the new school. Back in 1973, when I was young, gifted, and Black in New York City, I took, after going to the J School at Columbia, I wanted to write my own stories, fiction. So I took a class at the new school with Sidney Offutt.
Oh, I love Sidney. I love him. He's a great guy.
He just changed my life. He called me up one Sunday morning and just said, you know, you're the, you know, the way he talks, you're the greatest thing since sliced bread. And we have been friends since then. He is now 92. And he's just an extraordinary person. I learned how to teach. I learned how to mentor from him. So when you said the new school, I really felt like, yeah, good.
And then, so many people take his class. He is fantastic. He's
yes. And he really makes you feel like you're the center of the universe. He really does. And sure. I mean, I think that we're our first audience. I mean, I think that I'm who I'm writing for first and foremost. And sometimes I will have an imaginary person in my mind who, okay, if nobody else reads the book, I'm writing the book for them. But I am my first audience. And I've been writing long enough now that my goals are very simple. I want to write a beautiful sentence during every time I sit down. Try to write the beginnings of a beautiful sentence. And that's after a lot of books and et cetera. But I think we're our first audience. And for me, it's like, it's an act of faith. It's like prayer. It's meditation. The writing is so much more than, we talk a lot about getting published. And of course we want to get published. But I think at its core, for me, it's a deeply spiritual act. So.
Yeah, I think it depends on, for me, it depends on the goal. And I've had a lot of therapy, which I highly recommend to authors because I, for example.
Me too. I'm in that club.
7 years and was banging my head against the wall. And so what I find is that, you know, it depends on the goal. So sometimes I'm just writing, I'm journaling, or I love poetry. I have a degree in poetry. Sometimes, you know, every day I do a different goal. And I had a mentor who once said to me, when I told him I had writer's block, he said, plumbers don't get plumber's block. Just get to work every day. Just like sit down, get to work. And he said something that really helped me, which is he said, a page a day is a book a year. And that really helped me. And my books are short, so they're actually even more. So what I do sometimes is my goal is I just have to get it on the page, you know, get 250 words on the page. And then my goal is to get it to my writing workshop. I have two different writing groups. So my goal is to get it out there, and that's my job. And then their job is to tell me, does it make sense, or is it any good, or what's the direction? And what I say to my students, because I always give my favorite assignment, is write three double spaced type pages on your most humiliating secret. But what I say to my students is that three pages can change your life, and also that writing is a way to turn your worst experiences into the most beautiful. So sometimes if I'm depressed or if something is going on, you know, the goal is just to get it out and write about it. And I'll quote Toni Morrison. When somebody asked her, why do you write? She answered, because otherwise I'd be stuck with life.
You know, and as spiritual as I write for money. Some of my best writing has been for money. I remember years ago, I wanted to buy a house, and I hold myself up in my apartment for the weekend and said, you're going to come up with an idea that will get you an advance that will buy a house. And I came with an idea for an anthology called Wild Women Don't Wear No Blues, Black Women Writers on Love, Men, and Sex. And that word sex did it. And I got enough money to put a down payment on a house.
So by the way, my first book, somebody told me that too, that sex sells. And my first book, 500 Broke My Heart, was a Random House breakout book. So and by the way, the thing that I love about that is also you can change your goal every day or every week. So, you know, have a goal. Sometimes it's, you know, journaling. Sometimes it's, I want to publish something. Sometimes it's, I need to pay bills, you know, but I love the fact that, you know, that you can, every class, every episode, every day, every week, you could change the goal. But I do think having the goal at first is really good so that it's not amorphous. And interestingly, even when I went to therapy, I had very good therapy that helped me quit smoking and drinking and drugs. And the therapist even said, even in therapy, it's good to have a goal, you know, so like, what's your goal today? What do you want me to help you with? You know, so I think sometimes clarifying what you want is really is a good way to start.
So I'm having this revelatory thing happen as I'm listening to these guys, to you all, which is I spent 25 years living and writing in Canada, and it's a really different experience. So my first books were published in Canada, which is a completely different experience. Didn't make it across the border, and I think in some ways it for me, it made it possible to write. It made it possible to keep writing because my goal became, this is what it still is to this day, to find out what I don't know I know. So I can sit and think forever, but until I start putting things on the page, I really don't know what I know or what I even what I'm thinking. So, and that to this day kind of is where I live. But at the same time, I want to say that I think, and this is one of the things I talk about when I teach too, is that I think we all write because we want to communicate. And if we want to communicate, that means we want somebody to read what we're writing, even if it's just one person or five people. But I think, you know, eventually we are all looking for that audience, whether it's because we, for whatever reason, there are a million reasons. But anyway, I just, that mantra is of I'm writing to find out what I don't know I know is the mantra I live by. Pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, one of the most satisfying things about that my writing life has given me is it's allowed me to dismantle stereotypes and conventional wisdom and knee-jerk thinking. I was writing a novel a couple of years ago about a police officer who kills a young man during a police stop. And as I was writing the book, the main characters were the family of the young man. But every time people read the manuscript, they said, wait a minute, the cop is the most compelling person in this manuscript. Now, my son had been a victim of police brutality. And as a African-American woman, I had some feelings about giving my book as a main, to a cop as a main character. But there came a point when he took over. He just said, this is my novel. And it led me on a journey that was deeply satisfying. Deeply satisfying. And it surprised my readers because my readers were not expecting to empathize with this cop because I wrote not a story about a cop, but a story about redemption and renewal. And if I hadn't done what I did want to do, you know, I couldn't really have done that. And just a word about memoir, you know, I always say, look, the reason you're writing a memoir is because if you don't write it, you won't be able to go on with the rest of your life. Because it is so hard, it is so challenging and so necessary that nobody says, oh, I think I'll write, let me, what do I do today? Oh, I'll write a memoir. You know, and like Susan, I'm like to ask you, why does your family hate your books? I think I may know the answer, but
well, so they're very conservative. They're Michigan, you know, Republican, redneck, normal fields, keep their feelings in. They try to be private people. And luckily, I stumbled onto confessional poetry at a very young age. So I would march around the house saying, you know, I'm tired. Everybody's tired of my turmoil or dying is an art. I do it exceptionally well. And I just was so excited by these confessional poets that said all these things that you're never supposed to say out loud. So I fell in love with that. But again, therapy really helped because what I realized is they're not my audience. And what I told my family at a certain point is I even scripted it. My shrink helped me script it. You can be proud of my accomplishment of publishing a book without liking the book. So we actually were on a good roll. And by the way, I love what you said about when you're writing. And I have a rule with my classes, which is you have to follow your poetry. So even if you think you want to write one thing, if it's more beautiful and poetic in a different direction, by the way, which is the reason why you have to have good critics that you trust who will tell you the truth. And the other thing I wanted to add to the conversation is that some of my students always say to me, how are you so prolific? So aside from therapy, one of the things that I always say is I'm not afraid to suck. And what happens is that my first drafts are really, really bad and I don't care. So it's like I've given myself the freedom. So my first draft just has to be out there. That's my whole job. And then it's the job of my colleagues and my writing group critics and my teachers and mentors, it's their job to tell me what's good or bad or rewrite or start here or throw the first three pages out. But I feel like, you know, give yourself the freedom. It's really good to give yourself the freedom to just, you know, write whatever you want to write and don't, you know, don't kill yourself and say it has to be brilliant. Just like, you know, try for a little while and see where it takes you. And then again, that's where very, very important to have critics or a sounding board or mentors or editors or teachers who will, you know, guide you based on what your goal is. But when I just get it out there, it's very liberating to not, you know, to not limit myself or to not, you know, not think that it has to be brilliant or polished or finished. It just has to first page, 250 words a day. That's all I owe the world.
I always wished that I could start a museum of first drafts. Because the one thing that I always tell students is you've never read someone's first draft.
Now,
people sit down to write, trying museum to write the last draft. Drafts.
That's a good title, Museum of First Drafts. Wow. Yeah.
I did a section in my memoir workshop a couple of weeks ago on just revision. And I had everybody bring in one paragraph from what they were working on, a thesaurus and a dictionary. And that was one of the most invigorating classes we'd had. I shared with them a draft of something I'd written and the revision. And I went sentence by sentence as to why I had changed words, everything from clarity, the rhythm of sentences, meaning, finding a more interesting word. And I said, you know, I'm going to do this more often, you know, because revision is like that thing. We never really talk about it, you know, right. But to really get down deep down and dirty in just actually revising was really quite thrilling. I enjoyed it. And I think they got a lot out of it too.
And by the way, with a lot of my students, especially in my Sell Your Book class, I can't read, you know, 300 or 400 or 500 pages in 5 weeks. So oftentimes what I'll do is I will recommend a book doctor or ghost editor. And I think maybe you said that's sometimes you do
that's
that.
One thing I do, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what happens is that I have had a lot of luck, you know, so I'll try to kick a proposal or manuscript into shape. But my very first book, 7 years I spent trying to sell it, had no luck. And then I got the advice to try a ghost editor. And there was a woman in particular who'd been an editor at Doubleday for 20 years. And she not only helped me sell my first memoir to Random House, she helped me sell my first novel to St. Martin. So I swear by ghost editors, especially for book projects, because it's just, I have a great writing group, but it's so hard to, you know, people can't read and give you notes on 300 or 400 pages. So I highly recommend, you know, that experts like you too, or if you can find somebody, and if anybody wants to email me, profsue123@gmail.com, I have a few that I recommend. And I highly recommend you only do it with somebody who's an expert in your genre. So for example, Marita, since you publish novels or memoirs, that's a good thing for people to go to. So if somebody wants to do, you know, a biography, then go to a former editor or literary agent or someone who's published biography. So you need to get someone that's exactly, you know, in tune with your genre, I think.
I'm a big fan of all the goals, but one of the things that I do is I'm just like, before they go to any of you to sort through their heads and figure out the focus, that's my superpower, because people have the answers to their stories. They just don't always know the right questions, but you need to, first, I think you need to want it. You need to want to write to share. Then you need to just start dumping everything out of there. So I love your 250 words a day rule, Susan. Amy, do you have a rule similar to that to keep you motivated daily to write?
You know, I don't have a 250 word a day rule, but I do have an everyday rule, which I don't recommend to everyone, but I think you learn your own rhythm and you learn what can kind of keep your engine going. So even through all these 11 years of knowing I wasn't going to finish a project, I amassed a lot of work. And it just keeps my brain kind of going.
And Marita?
Well, when I'm working on a project, it's 1 hour, 5 days a week. And as I've gotten older, I found that slow writing is very powerful. Mm-hmm. And actually, in some ways, I write more in that hour than when I was writing. You know, I sit down for 4 hours, you know, those 4 hours I have to check in the refrigerator, you know, take a nap, look at my soap opera, you know, look out the window. So the four I probably do too, but it just focuses me. And it takes, by lifting the stress of I've got to produce so much, I just find it much more satisfying. So for me, when I'm working on a project an hour, you know, 5 days a week. I try to get it in the morning because that's sort of my most alert time. But if I don't get it in the morning, like today, I'm working on revising something. So I didn't get to do it this morning because doctor's appointment. So after we get off, I'll do my hour.
I think morning is really, really important. And one of the things my therapist helped me do was get everybody else's needs and desires and helping everyone else out of the way until I get my stuff done. Cause I help a lot of people with, you know, students and people with writing. And it used to be, I would wake up and I would be answering editors and editing for other people and whatever. And he completely switched it. So I wake up and thank God I'm married to a writer. So we're both on the same page. So we both like, don't even talk. We both get to work. And then whether it's an hour or more, 250 words, then I do other people's work. And then I go to teach. But that little change of like waking up and working on the most important thing to me, whether it's a book project or if I have a short piece due, I find that to be really important. And there was something that there was a poet I heard speak, Marie Poncet, who had 7 children. And people said, how do you write? And she said, 10-minute increments. And if that's all you have, she wrote many poetry books, 10 minutes, at least give yourself that, even if it's 3 a.m. while you're, you know, while you're doing a feeding or something like that. So I love that because I have so many students that have all kinds of obligations, whether it's as a parent or working or, you know, taking care of being a caretaker, whatever. So I love the idea that, you know, fight to just get that 10 minutes if you can. And also if there's any way, I mean, I used to, even when I had a full-time job, I would just wake up earlier just so that I could have that little time where my first fresh energy, you know, could go to my own work and not give it away to everybody else.
It's a very important dessert first philosophy. So I am totally with you on that. One of my big things too is you put it in the calendar because if it's in the calendar, it exists. If it's not in the calendar, right, it doesn't exist. And a big Deb rule is, you know, beginning of the week, decide when you're going to write. You can move the appointments around. You just can't delete them. So the importance of committing to yourself so you get your stuff done. So you put yourself at the front of the line, which you all kind of said in your own way. And I have to add, for those who, whether or not you're frequently tuned into Goal Chat, frequently my guests don't know each other. And I'm just amazed that I found 3 powerhouse women who actually didn't know each other before today to join in the conversation. So Amy, Susan, and Marita, I'm really loving this conversation. What is the first step? We got them writing, but what is that first step into getting things published? And by the way, Susan, love the title of the instant gratification is not soon enough, because I mean, if ever there was a title that was indicative of the world and the time in which we live, it is that.
I actually stole it from, what's her name? It's Postcards from the Edge, Carrie Fisher. She had a sentence that said, the only problem with instant gratification is that it takes too long. So I call my classes instant gratification takes too long class. And I always give her credit for that. But by the way, so for my classes, what I say is 3 pages can change your life. So the first assignment, if you want to get published, if your goal is I want to get out there to newspapers or magazines or launch a book, and I want to do it quickly, you know, 30 years of teaching, the assignment that works the most is write 3 pages about your most humiliating secret. And, what I like to do is, and in Byline Bible, I actually write the places where you could publish it. But basically, there's 1,000 different newspapers or magazines that take these kind of personal essays. So it's New York Times Modern Love column, or the Washington Post Inspired Life, or Slate, or Salon, or you know, New Yorker's Personal History, or New York Magazine's The Cut. So we actually write down all the places that will take a provocative, fascinating, revealing first person essay, you know. And I always say the most provocative that you could write and put your name on it, because the whole idea is to get your name out there. And most of the publications you have to use your name. But so 3 pages can change your life. So write 3 pages on your most humiliating secret. And that's how it starts. And sometimes I will, like, for example, when I wanted to be in the New York Times Modern Love, I really targeted it. So I read 100 of them. So I really got a sense of what they do and how many words they are and what topics they've covered before and the tone and whether you could swear. So if you're really gung-ho, aside from, you know, writing 3 pages, first do a tiny bit of research. If you decide, oh, I want to be an Elle magazine or I want to be an Esquire, read what they're publishing first so that you get a sense of it and then sit down to write, because that'll give you a framework of, does it have to be timely? Is it 1500 words? Is it 1000 words? Does it have to be first person? Does it have, you know, are they usually past tense? So by reading 100 of them, you really get a very clear cut sense for what they're looking for.
Awesome. And so easy. I mean, I love the simple goals. They may take time, but it's very direct and very efficient. So love that. Amy, what do you think? What's your best?
Tell me, remind me the question. I was so fascinated by Susan, I've lost the question. I'm learning a lot from you, Susan.
Thank you.
What is the first step to take if you want to get published?
Well, I think for me, the first step is deciding that's what you want. And then really thinking about what does that mean, right? Because there's so many things about publishing. I'll give you an example. I have two clients right now who I'm a coach ghost editor for. One of them wants to be a best-selling author. That's what he wants. So I have him kind of steered in a different direction than the other, who wants this particular book that is really meaningful for him to be the book he wants it to be. And then he's going to find the home. So they're sort of different, you know, there's like a different path for those two people. And so I think the first thing is to figure out what is it? Like, is this something I have to get out into the world? Is it time for me to like try to get stuff out? My husband right now has finished a book and he's getting a million pieces out because it's going to make it easier for him to sell the book, right? So it just kind of depends on where you're at. So I think it's being really honest with yourself, really honest about what is this and what do I want from it?
It starts with those book goals, the writing goals. And maybe it isn't a book that you're writing, but to think about, you know, taking that time, gifting yourself the time for that introspection.
And the honesty. I mean, yeah. I really think it's important that you kind of go, you know, when I'm teaching, a lot of times people go, well, it's fine. I want to make it really great, but it's okay if nobody wants to read it. And I don't believe them usually, but I do think that some people, you know, I really do think people are at different places in their lives with their work and need to kind of figure out what that is, be really honest, and then sort of target the goals.
Awesome. Okay, Marita, your turn. What do you think?
Well, and I agree with both Amy and Susan. A lot of times I think that people, I like to say the most important thing you need to know about getting published is how hard it takes, how hard it is, and how good you have to be. I think that there's a sort of we live in this strange era where everyone feels rightly or wrongly that they have an inalienable right to be published, to write a book and have that book published and possibly become a bestseller. And there's good things about that because we wouldn't be making money if we weren't in that place. Technology, society's changed. Just the whole thing of memoir, for example, the fact that writing about your life is now legitimate, that it can be considered literature, has vastly changed the publishing industry and the literary world. But I just like to tell people, you know, if your goal is to write a really well-written book, and it should be, even if you're saying, well, I'm writing a book. Some people that I work with sometimes are just, they just want to write a book for their family. I said, that's fine, but I want you to write the best book for your family that you can. So I want you to try to write a scene, you know, try to remember the dialogue that happened, you know. So I think that people really feel often that it's easy to get published. And I think that you can inform them that this is a very powerful, sometimes daunting, but very satisfying thing they're doing. And it's going to take time. It's going to take time. Last night I was looking at this PBS show on, this guy did 90 hours of deconstructing the Beatles. 90 hours deconstructing their songs. And it was, you know, I only looked at 1 hour, it was absolutely fascinating. And he was talking about the song Strawberry Fields. They did 26 takes of that. 26 different takes. And every time they get to one, it was perfect to everybody but John Lennon. And John Lennon was saying, it's not perfect. And then it resulted, of course, in the beautiful song that we now know. I just wish writers could slow down and know that this is a very important thing that they're doing, even if it is just for your family. And I find that when I'm working with people who are just writing for their family or who don't care if a big publisher, you know, they'll self-publish or whatever, that when I force them or encourage them to develop their writing,
tomato, tomato,
they are so satisfied because, oh, I didn't know I could do that. I didn't know I could write a scene. So yeah, I just wish people knew that it's going to take some time to become a good writer. And yes, you want to be a good writer, whether you want to write, you want to write the best genre, you want to write the best romantic, you want to write the best sex manual, whatever, but have, you know, high goals.
You know, I just want to say something that I learned the last few months. And I always think like, I'm never going to learn anything new because I've been doing this for 100 years is what I always say. It's more like, you know, 50, 60 years, like, and 50 years, I guess. And I've been writing to family about Israel. I have a lot of family in Israel, and it's such a fraught moment, politically, culturally, socially. And so I have a cousin who I love, and we don't always agree, but I've been practicing writing really truthfully and really beautifully and really thoughtfully and like not trying to explode things, right? Like so that I can say not so that I'm not bullshitting, right? But that I'm also not ending like I'm not ending the person's reading, right? Which, so it's been a really cool experiment. And I kind of have been thinking it might be a cool experiment for people to try. Like just writing a letter to someone who usually, you know, hates them or disagrees with them or will be mad at them or, but that, so to Marita's point about, you know, like really how it takes time and you want to be so careful and truthful at the same time and beautiful. So it's sort of a neat little experiment.
There's a great line that I write to my students, which is especially if I assign, you know, 900 words and they give me like 5,000 words, I always say, quote the line, "I'm sorry, I'm writing you a long letter. I didn't have time to write you a short one."
Right. Right.
Right. And I'm like, go back and spend more time and give me the you know, because if an editor tells you a word count, a newspaper magazine editor, that's their word count. So it's very difficult to, you know, to be more concise and short. And so it might take, you know, I'll tell a student instead of handing it in 24 hours, it's not due until next week. So spend the whole week, you know, figuring out exactly what it is you want to say and make it much shorter.
Yeah. I mean, the question is, how many words can you get rid of?
Good. Right.
In terms of, you know, when we were doing the revising exercises in that workshop I mentioned earlier, you know, I said, the question is, how many words can you get rid of? How many really strong, muscular, at the same time, beautiful words can you find to replace the 18 ordinary words mm-hmm. that you're using?
Mm-hmm. I think one thing, remember, what was it like 20 years ago when Ego Publishing, I forget that there's a, I call it Ego Publishing, but when people first started self-publishing, there was so much awful out there because, oh, I could just hit print. And it's great that it's an option for people who don't have the time, energy, and wherewithal or patience to go traditionally. But if you're getting your work out there, why wouldn't you want it to be as perfect, as beautiful, but, as honest.
But newsflash.
Yes.
Graduates of MFA programs end up independently publishing. I mean, there are so many really, really good writers these days. The market is literally glutted that many, many really good writers are turning to independent publishing because the market is the publishing, the mainstream publishing, the legacy publishing has shrunk, while the number of people who want to write and can write quite well has ballooned. So self-publishing, they now call it independently publishing, is a home of many fine writers. I know the days you're talking about. They were awful. Right. I mean, people would go to these conferences and people would brag, oh, I wrote my book over the weekend. You can too. We're a long way from that.
And thank goodness.
It's legitimate, and there's some fine writing that is coming out, and I'm glad for that.
Although I will say that I would say when students come to me, especially if they don't have a track record or they haven't really tried, and they say, I'm going to put it on my Substack, I'm going to put it on my blog, I'm going to self-publish. To me, I feel like they're saying, okay, like that's what you do after you've had 1,000 rejections and nobody else will take it. So one of the things I say is try it, because I have a lot of students who their first thing that they ever published got in the New York Times or the Washington Post or the New Yorker or New York Magazine. So first of all, you never know. So don't immediately go to self-publish.
Right.
First. And also there's a big difference between, so you have mainstream publishing, but there's small presses, indie presses, and university presses. And if you have a shot at any of those, and I've worked in the range, the even really tiny indie presses and university presses and small presses, maybe they'll only give you a $500 or $1,000 advance, but they are completely connected to getting your book reviewed and getting it in bookstores and getting it read. You know, so I would say if there's any choice, when people come to me, I'm like, don't jump to self-publish or don't give it away. First, if it turns out that you've tried a whole bunch of agents and a whole bunch of editors and nobody is the least bit interested, but you really believe in what you're doing, then go for it. But I would say you never know. And so if you there really is a route that works for some people, especially desperate for diverse voices these days. So I have a lot of students that, you know, there's just about 43 little factoids that you need to understand in terms of how do you submit to an agent? How do you submit to an indie press? How do you get to these university presses? And so I would say it is worth it to educate yourself, to try that stuff first. And I give as much information as I can in Byline Bible, Book Bible. Cannot tell you how many people their debut not only was, in New York Times or Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, but then literary agents called them and debut books came out from, if not big presses, impressive, prestigious publishers. So I would just say, if people are listening, don't jump to publish your stuff really quickly for free. You know, give the mainstream or give the smaller places a shot first, because you really never know. And sometimes you do get very lucky.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what I tell people, that just get out there, get the rejection letters from the agents or whatever. Just to, as you just said, educate yourself about the industry that you're a part of or that you want to be a part of. Yeah.
Amy, did you have something to add?
I just agree with everybody. I mean, I think, there's also hybrid publishing, which is another sort of opportunity, which is, I think I would try before self-publishing.
I agree with you 100%, because then you can get the books reviewed and you have a good name.
Yeah. And there are different packages and, there's different ways to go about it. I think the beauty of being published by any of the small presses, or exactly what Susan's saying about being able to have the opportunity to have your book reviewed, to have your book in stores, to have your book in libraries, have a distribution.
My first small press book, so I had been with Random House and big publishers, and my first small press book, Skyhorse Press, who gave me a $5,000 advance for a book, that was the first book that got on the New York Times bestseller list, because they knew how to market and they really marketed it in a way. And also because at Random House, I was just like, this tiny fish in a big...
Exactly. Show.
Right. But all of a sudden with Skyhorse, if they're going to give you a $5,000 advance, they really care and they really want
Skyhorse published my last novel.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And I was with Doubleday for 100 years. And like you said, I mean, I had some wonderful editors there, but I was a tiny fish in a big pond. And, you know, every year they will say, okay, this is the book of the season, you know, right. And, you know, and, but I found that my novel with Skyhorse, they got behind it. I mean, 24,000 copies of, wow. of a serious literary author.
No, that's awesome.
But I never sold that with Doubleday, but they got yeah. behind it. So yeah, yeah. Skyhorse and Sidney Offit. Hey, we need to.
I'm gonna tell a funny story also on myself, because I did self-publish, regret it to this day. And the reason I did it was because I had a piece, it had been in Modern Love, an excerpt had been in Modern Love. I was in the middle of, was with an agent out, you know, looking for a home. And I had an opportunity to be on a national television show and they wanted to promote the book. And I thought, well, then I need to have the book and I won't have it ready in time. And so I self-published it. Now, I want to say this. It was a
Amy, before you finish, also share your book.
Well, the book's called Desperado's Wife.
I knew that, but they didn't. So
right.
Go on.
So I was on this Katie Couric's new national television show. And this is what I learned. People who watch daytime television aren't readers.
Exactly.
When I looked at the Amazon reviews,
for some reason, the ones that are around at 6 a.m. buy books, but they don't. It's the funniest thing. You're right. Exactly.
So, I had all these Amazon reviews, and right around the time of the show, the reviews were, she was really interesting on the show, but there were too many words in the book. Of course, they're watching TV, right?
I have a question.
Those shows like books. They sell books, those really early morning shows.
I have a question. Do you think, please. Well, what's your feeling about social media? Because I wonder if you're spending all your time on social media, are you really reading? And yet I know that, for example, 4 or 5 years ago, I worked with a social media consultant who gave me a new website, gave me a whole new look. Radically changed my life. She got me really interacting. You know, I went from posting nothing but having followers because I'd done so much. I said, why are these people following me? I don't do anything for them. Well, she boosted it. And I saw what social media could do. But at the same time, I feel a little bit like it's both true that social media sells books and false. Because I just wonder if they're really reading these books, are they really, really buying? You guys, what are your feelings about that?
Go ahead.
Anybody?
What I was going to say is, because I have some background in social media as well, it's, you need to be on, so especially if you're looking to get discovered, I think the social media platform is a good thing. But like everything, you need balance. You need that time to be writing, to developing your craft. You can be on all of the platforms with your branding, but you cannot be spending all day, every day on all of them, because then nothing gets written. And I was also partly vamping to give you all time to finish your thoughts. So Amy, what do you think?
You know, I actually think it's sort of changing right now. Mm-hmm. I think it, I because I work with teenagers, I'm kind of really aware of what's going on with them. And I'm noticing that actually kids are starting to read books again. And I think that's part of it. It's made it a little sexier, right?
Anything.
But they're actually finding books on social media. So I don't think that, I mean, I could be wrong. I don't know, but I don't think it was such a thing. But right now it feels like you put something about your new book on Instagram. They definitely don't read emails. I can tell you that. But I think it's important, but I also think it's like a rabbit hole. You can kind of get lost in it and not be writing.
Yeah, so. I did a panel recently with, I always make a joke that if you get a dozen writers in a room and ask them how they did it, you'll get a dozen different stories.
Right. Yeah.
So I did a panel recently with 12 students who all have different, they recently got book deals in all different genres. And of course, every single person did it differently, which leads me to my favorite rule with love and writing, which is you could do anything as long as it works. So for some people, I actually know of a poet who got 60,000 followers on Instagram and she got a deal from Knopf, and the editor told me, We were pleasantly shocked that a poet could get 60,000 followers on Instagram. Part of the reason why we coughed up a decent advance. So sometimes it works, sometimes it's a drain. I would say it's hard to fake. So you know, it doesn't make sense for a new person that hates social media to fight to go on every single one because somebody told them to. But if you find one, whether you're a visual person and it's Instagram, or a political person and it's X, or whether it's LinkedIn because of job background or whatever, if you find one where it feels authentic or interesting to you, it's definitely worth trying. And I have a few students who refuse to do social media. And then interestingly, they did get book deals because you can get a book deal based on one great piece in the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. And then they complain nothing happened with their book. And it's because you're not on social media, so you're not plugging it. But I don't think there's one rule for everyone. And I think if you don't want to do social media, you could probably still publish well. And if you're great at social media, that doesn't mean you're going to get a book deal, you know? So I think that, like I said, you could do anything as long as it works, and you don't know until you try.
I think it really goes back to what we've been talking about the whole time, which is you need to put the time and the energy, and you kind of have to do all the things, but you need to prioritize the things that mean the most to you. So it's all about finding that balance, especially going back to sometimes we write for ourselves. We're a first audience, Marita was saying. Sometimes we write because we need to share knowledge to educate. And believe it or not, sometimes we write, for fun, for money, for whatever reason. But start with those writing goals, the publishing goals, and then you can let everything grow from there. Which transitions me into, let's give our audience some goals. And it's really dealer's choice. It could be a writing goal, a publishing goal. What is something somebody could do today, tonight, tomorrow, that's going to make a difference for achieving their writing/publishing dreams? So,
I say to my students, three pages can change your life. And the most in 30 years, I have students with more than 700 books out. The short three pages that did the most good in terms of publishing and in terms of books is write three pages about your most humiliating secret. And I'm not saying rush to publish it, but try writing three pages on your most humiliating secret that you could put your name on. And, and like I said, there are so many newspapers and magazines that are open to that exact piece. So I would say if you're going to do any assignment, try that.
And I love the qualifier that you can put your name on, because what is the purpose in writing under pseudonyms? Because I know I don't understand it. You're there to get the word out about who you are, to build your platform. So thank you. My own personal rant there. Amy, do you have a goal to gift?
Well, I love Susan so much that I'm going to do it. But I think what I'd say is, that we sort of started talking early on. I think Marita was saying about stretching your muscles. So I would say try three pages that you can't imagine ever having written, like in a genre you've never tried or in a style you've never tried, and just see what happens. I think a lot of times if people are sort of focused on fiction and they can't imagine memoir, and they try it, it could be inspiring, and vice versa.
Years ago, when I had my in-person writers group in Santa Monica, there was someone who was always writing sci-fi, a horror, just the most outlandish stuff. And I challenged him to write something personal. And wouldn't you know, it was the best thing that he ever wrote in the years that he was there. So
that happened to me. That happened to a student recently, where online during the pandemic, where she came up with a bunch of ideas that weren't interesting. And the best idea she came up with for the humiliation essay was she loved wearing a mask because she had had cranial surgery and she had always been self-conscious about her face. And she loved wearing masks because it was the first time she wasn't self-conscious. Christine Wyman, she published it in the Washington Post. It was like the most revealing thing she ever did. Led to like a best-selling book called Jawbreaker, a kid's book about a little girl who has a weird neck that she's embarrassed about. So yeah, so it could be a breakthrough if you do something different. That's a great idea. Just try it.
So Marita, what goal do you want to get?
Well, it's sort of similar. Write from a point of view in which you're putting yourself, if you're writing memoir, or a character, if you're writing fiction, doing something out of character, doing something totally unexpected and surprising, and just write the first sentence. They're doing that crazy, unexpected thing and see where that takes you. And I think you'll be very surprised how much fun you'll have and how much you'll discover.
I feel like so these are all like write 3 pages on ... goals. Which is awesome because you don't, especially, and we forget to do things a little bit different. It's always good to stretch, but it's also really kind of fun. And I think especially, and I got from the story you told, Susan, I got chills from it because you never know who needs to hear what it is you have to share.
By the way, the woman, Christina Wyman, who sold Jawbreaker, she sold it to an editor, a big editor at FSG, who also had the same cranial surgery as a kid.
Wow.
Completely identified with that story.
Wow.
First revealing personal essay she ever wrote. And it just was like, oh my God.
Where can people learn more about you, Amy?
A couple places. First, amyfriedman.net. But also I'm going to make a little plug for, I have an editors group called the LA Editors and Writers Group. It's laewg.com.
So Marita, where can people learn more about you?
MaritaGolden.com, on Facebook, Marita Golden Author, on Twitter, X at Marita Golden.
Fantastic. And Susan, where can people find you?
Yeah, so I'm Susan Shapiro Net, and on Instagram, I'm ProfSue123, and I'm on Twitter. And also, if people just want to email me directly, I answer emails at night because I quit all my other addictions and I'm addicted to emailing. So ProfSue123@gmail.com, and I promise to answer all questions.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for that. And I am at thedebmethod.com. I'm at thedebmethod everywhere. In the recap, I also like to put everybody's LinkedIn as well as their website. So I will share that from all of you as well. And if you need a little nudge in the right direction of your goals, you can grab a copy of your goal guide at your favorite place to buy books. And I am live every Monday at 4 p.m. Pacific on Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube. And you can subscribe to the Goal Chat podcast on the Marketing Podcast Network at your favorite place to listen to and or watch podcasts. Wow. I feel like this abundance of writing goodness. Susan, do you have a final thought to share?
Just, I love that writing is a way to turn your worst experiences into the most beautiful. And that's very important to me because it's empowering, gives you power.
It definitely gives you power, for sure.
You can give yourself power by doing that. And I love knowing that.
That's fabulous. Amy, final thought?
I think we all have demons that kind of talk at us and tell us things that we should just tell them to shut up. And one of the things I do is sometimes I write letters to my demons, like to tell them why they're wrong.
Marita, final thought to you.
I think everybody who's got the nerve should write a letter to themselves congratulating themselves for being a badass and celebrating how absolutely awesome they are. And I think that's one of the most important things anybody can do, especially a writer. It may be the most important thing you'll ever write.
I feel like that's also a bonus goal, because we are amazing. We are empowered. Owning it is really the best step into getting the life you want. Thank you again so much for the wonderful conversation, Amy Friedman, Marita Golden, Susan Shapiro. Thank you for tuning in to Gold Chat. And again, you can get the recaps at thedebmethod.com and follow at thedebmethod to get all this goal setting goodness. You've got your writing goals. You've got your publishing goals. Go out there and go for it, because we know you can do it.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.